Well, good night. Good evening. Well, some of you have already started falling asleep the moment you saw me come up here, so I had to make sure to wake you up. But for those of you who are awake, good evening. So to our friends, we welcome you. We thank you for being here tonight at the Southeast Church of Christ. To our brethren as well, thank you for being here, for joining us. Of course, those of you who are awake. We hope and pray that we're all here stirring each other up in love and good works. As we know, Wednesday nights, we are studying the book of Proverbs. And if you weren't here Sunday morning, so we actually ended chapter 11, which is where we left off last week. Wednesday on Sunday morning. It just kind of happened that it fit right in with what our new theme for 2026 is. So we were able to see that the conclusion of chapter 11 there in verse 30 and verse 31 is that every one of these things, the value of possession, of possessing integrity, is that it makes us a blameless man. It said it makes us a blameless man. And of course, Sundays, from here until the end of the third quarter, we're looking at the subject that has been entitled Marking the Blameless Man, taken from Psalm 37, verse 37. So we have concluded chapter 11, and now we'll go into chapter 12 of Proverbs. And what we see here, now remember that we mentioned that chapter 11 was very unique in the sense that we were able to find a verse that tied all of these proverbs together. But typically in the book of Proverbs, what we see is that each section or each verse can be its own thought. Remember that in Hebrew poetry, they don't rhyme words. They don't usually typically follow syllables or any of that account, but rather the focus is more on rhyming thoughts. So because of this, each one of these pithy sayings, right, can have its own theme. But in chapter 12, we see that this is exactly what takes place now, only that there are a few sections or a few string of verses where the idea is tied together. But many times you'll see that it goes from one subject to the other. What we will see, though, is that in Proverbs chapter 12, we have a string, I'm going to call it, of antithetical proverbs. What do we mean when we say antithetical? Who remembers? What is an antithetical statement? So let's go to chapter 12 and notice just verse 1 just to start off, okay? Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction, the New King James Version says, is stupid. Okay, we're going to get a little bit into that, but I want to make sure I'm not calling anyone stupid. I'm just reading the translation. But to begin with, what is the antithesis that is found there in verse 1? What's the antithetical statement made?
Comparison between loving instruction and hating instruction.
Very good. So it's a contrast, right? The comparison and contrast between someone who rejoices in instruction versus someone who rejects it. And is, if you will, based on what it's teaching us, right? Well, the person who loves instruction is someone who is wise, is someone who is intelligent, right? Versus someone who rejects correction is someone who is, well, stupid, as the passage says. Well, from the first verse all the way to the final verse of the chapter, you're going to see that it is, as I've already mentioned, a string of statements like these. Every one of these verses is going to be a compare and a contrast. Okay? Every one of these verses is going to show us two ways. Okay? And the way we can understand this chapter, I want you to look at verse 1 and then someone read for me verse 28.
In the way of righteousness is life, and in the pathway thereof there is no death.
What does that remind us of that we just saw, we just wrapped up? Well, yes, but I meant as in the last quarter. What does that remind us of? How did Moses end his discourses? I call upon heaven and earth, and I place before you the way of life and the way of death. Remember? And then Moses implores them, choose life. In the 12th chapter of Proverbs, we are seeing that in verse 1 and verse 28, this essentially, if you will, is a cycle that Solomon makes. And throughout every one of the verses, he is showing us the pathway that leads to life versus the pathway that leads to death. When we begin at verse 1 of this chapter is basically teaching us you're either a foolish man or stupid, or you're either a wise man or intelligent, knowledgeable. What chapter 12 does is it tests to see if we are indeed wise or not. You see, when we get into verse 1, in certain translations where it says whoever loves instruction, it actually says whoever loves discipline or whoever loves correction. According to the Hebrew word for the word instruction there in verse 1, the Hebrew word is properly understood to mean correction, to mean discipline. And it makes better sense, right? It flows better into the idea of what verse 1 is saying. Because to love instruction, right, is to love knowledge, but he who hates correction, well, you can hate correction and still love instruction, right? You can love to learn, but you perhaps don't like it when you are told that the answer you're providing is wrong, right? This is why it's important that when we begin chapter 12, verse 1, we understand that whoever loves correction, whoever loves discipline, right? Go to chapter 9. Go back to Proverbs chapter 9. This is not the first time that Solomon brings this out, right? First, chapter 9, and we're going to read verses 7 through 10, if someone can read it for us. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 7 through 10.
He that reproveth the scorner getteth himself shame, and he that rebuketh the wicked man getteth himself a block. Reprove not a scorner, lest he hate you. Rebuke a wise man, and he will love you. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will be yet wiser. Teach a just man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the holy is understanding.
So, who would, according to Proverbs 12:1, be knowledgeable and who would be ignorant? Well, what do we learn about the wise man in 8b of Proverbs 9b, in 9ab? We learn that the wise man is not above reproach. Just because he's wise doesn't mean that he will not stumble. Just because he's wise, it does not mean that he will not err or make mistakes. And therefore, a wise man who is truly wise knows this. This is why a wise man loves someone who does what to him? Rebukes him, right? Corrects him, as some of you have already said. So notice how Proverbs 12:1 is going back to this thought that Solomon has already established. And Solomon in verse 9, well, beginning at verse 7, but we're going to do it backwards here because that's how Proverbs 12:1 is established. In verse 9, he elaborates on why the wise man loves someone who rebukes him. Why the wise man appreciates, right, takes into consideration a person who corrects him. According to verse 9, notice, give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man and he will increase in learning. So why does a wise man value someone who was willing to rebuke him or to follow what Proverbs 12:1 is saying, someone who's willing to correct them?
He sets him right.
He sets him right, okay.
Increases his wisdom.
He increases his wisdom, right? So when I read this, I think about Apollos. Why would I think about Apollos?
He was a good teacher, but he didn't have exactly the right. When they came and told him, like, hey, we can teach you more completely.
Very good. What was that?
He
or the correct way?
The correct way, right? So here's a scholar from the University of Alexandria, right? You know, this was the most renowned university, the most renowned academics that were known in the first century there, right? This man was from Alexandria. He was a scholar. Not only was he a scholar, you know, I always like to point this out. The fact that the Holy Spirit gives him the adjectives that it does there in Acts chapter 9, in Acts chapter 18, right? It says that he was a mighty man in word, that he was eloquent, that he was, you know, he was very knowledgeable. We would say that he was a wise man, wouldn't we? But even that wise man wasn't correct in everything, because he knew only what? He only knew the baptism of John, didn't he? He didn't know the baptism of Christ. So this wise man had a small error. So he was a good teacher, but he was lacking something. You see, the wise man who is truly wise is not trying to be good, or rather, he's not trying to be good enough. He wants to be great. And he understands that in order to be great, he cannot be above reproach. Because those corrections is how he's going to continue to grow and increase his learning and his wisdom. See, Apollos was not above reproach. In fact, when Priscilla and Aquila corrected him, what did Apollos do with that information? Domingo?
I just had a thought, because I guess because wisdom knows foolishness, so it would be foolish not to listen.
So the moment the wise man chooses not to listen, he ceases to be what? He just wanted to say the word, Joe. That's what it says there. Yeah. Yes. But yes, the moment... Now think about that. It's such a simple concept, right? But yet, how deep it is that the moment the wise man refuses correction, that wise man moves from being wise to being stupid. What happened to all of his wisdom? What happened to all of his knowledge? It goes down the drain. Joe, can you read 1 Corinthians 8:1 for us, please? 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1. Can you read it for us, please, real quick? And then you can share your comment. 1 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 1.
Now concerning food sacrificed to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge makes one considered.
So why did the wise man become stupid? Because his knowledge puffed him up. His knowledge made him conceited, as the translation that our brother read. But what made him stupid, following it, what the New King James says in Proverbs 12:1, is that he forgot to love. Because a wise man loves the one who rebukes him, remember? What made him wise is loving the person who had the boldness, the humility, and the concern to correct him. The moment he forgets to love, the moment that he ignores that he's being loved, he becomes unwise. His wisdom becomes vain. Because now his knowledge has become his downfall, hasn't it? He got puffed up. He went into this realm that the Gnostics believed during the first century. Right? So, go ahead, Brother Joe. I know you had your hand raised before I asked you to read.
I just want to say this. It becomes the individual's responsibility, what he's going to do with that knowledge that he receives. You can reject it, or you can accept it. And that makes you a fool, or that makes you wise, depending which way you go. So it becomes our responsibility to continue.
And in chapter 12 of Proverbs is what we're seeing, right? Because the reason Solomon begins this chapter with verse 1, once more, he's placing a self-examination. He's giving us a test that we have to give ourselves. He's doing the same thing he did in chapter 9, verses 7 through 10. What are you going to do with this information? Are you going to use it? Or are you going to refuse it? But he's also warning us that the following proverbs he's about to give us are going to step on some toes, aren't they? The following proverbs in chapter 12, some of us, including myself, we're going to feel the sting because we may be guilty of the negative part of the proverb. See, most of us are going to feel good if we're in the positive column of the proverb, right? If I've accepted correction, and if I've used the correction, and I've never refused anyone for correction, well, that first half of the proverb encourages me, right? It motivates me. But what about the times that I refuse or deny correction because instead of seeing the proper information, I'm looking at the one delivering the information? What if I chose to refuse it because what can a child teach me? I am an adult. What if I refuse it because this person is poor and I am wealthy? Or we're a different race class, or we're at a different educational class, or whatever the case may be. Notice what Solomon is saying. If what they were offering, if the correction they were giving you was accurate, and you refused it, either because they were the wrong color, the wrong culture, the wrong wealth class, the wrong social class, or the wrong job title, you're stupid. Because you're focusing on the wrong thing. You should be focusing on the information which has none of these things. You know, if you're refusing to accept information from your subordinate because you're the commanding officer, but your subordinate has accurate information that can save lives, and you refuse to take it because you're the commanding officer, you're stupid because you're not wise. A wise man knows to do what with the information? Search it out. Meditate upon it. And ask yourself, is this advice or is this correction appropriate? Does it apply? You know, in the book of Acts, we see that the Apostle Paul was a prisoner, don't we? Toward the last part of the Acts chapter 27. Acts chapter 27. And when I was studying this and I was looking at this in Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1, this is what came to my mind. Chapter 27, verses 9. And we're going to read, we're going to read up to verse 12. Proverbs 27, verse 9 through 12. The Bible says, "Now when much time had been spent and sailing was now dangerous because the fast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, 'Men, I perceive that this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also our lives.' Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and the owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. And because the harbor was not suitable to winter in, the majority advised to set sail from there also, if by any means they could reach Phoenix, a harbor of Crete, opening toward the southwest and northwest, and winter there." Was Paul's information accurate?
Yes.
We read later on that they find themselves in a tempest, don't they? What happened to the ship? It sunk, didn't it? They were ready. In fact, they were about to kill a lot of men, weren't they? When we read, we see there, right, once again, in verses 21 and forward, that they were about to make a very wrong decision yet again. But Paul once more speaks up. And this time, the centurion listens, doesn't he? They would have avoided that tempest. But based on the context that we're reading in verses 9 through 12, what helped the centurion make his choice? The advice given by both men, or the fact that one was a helmsman and the other one was a prisoner? You see, In Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1, what Solomon is getting us prepared for is how to listen spiritually. How to listen spiritually. Because the opposite is also true. False teachers and false prophets are charming, aren't they? They're charming and they have very sophisticated, flattering words. If we don't learn how to listen spiritually, we can be tangled up in their false doctrines, can't we? Solomon is teaching us that everything that we learn, we have to be willing and ready to use it and place it on the scales of righteousness. We have to weigh the information. If the information is accurate and it applies to me, then the wise thing would be for me to accept it and apply it in my life. If the truth that is being spoken to me, although painful, is true, then I should love the person who was willing to tell me those truths, because they were wanting me to become even wiser and to increase in my knowledge, right? They wanted what was best for me. They wanted me to grow. They wanted me to mature. It was criticism, yes, but it was constructive, not destructive. Yeah, Brother Joe, and then Sister Renee.
I think this comes into play, brother. Me as a father, I give advice to my kids. I tell them this: learn from other people's mistakes. You don't have time to make them all. So if we learn, if we accept instruction, we will come on ahead. Because sometimes we, as older, have more experience than the person beginning and is learning. And as long as we maintain ourselves directly on the Word of God, we will come on ahead. And Brother Domingo was saying a while ago, Galatians, what persuaded you to go a different way? Mm-hmm. You were right on it. So we have to learn from other people's mistakes so we won't make them. We don't have time to make them all.
Mm-hmm. Sister Renee?
I was going to say, knowledge is beneficial, but you also have to be careful with it. I've known a lot of not only young people, but preachers who have gone off for higher education, and they've lost their souls because of that, because like you said, they didn't spiritually follow that knowledge that they were hearing. They just blindly accepted it, and it caused them to lose their soul.
Mm-hmm. So when we get into chapter 12, what Solomon is doing with all these series in the string of antithetical proverbs, he's helping us exercise our judgment and our discernment. He's helping us how to exercise our judgment and our discernment. Now, earlier I was mentioning the Gnostics, okay? Remember that the Gnostics were a group of philosophers who were spewing false doctrine. The Gospel according to John and the first letter of John were written to combat Gnostic false doctrine. Gnostics were trying to make sense of how could Jesus be both man and God, because they had this belief that all that is spiritual is good and all that is matter is wrong, is evil. Therefore, God being a spirit cannot become matter, because God who is all good cannot become something that is all evil. So for them, the way they were trying to make logic of how could Jesus of Nazareth be both man and God, it was either one of two theories. Either when he was on the cross, this is according to Gnostic belief, it was just a phantom there. It was just an illusion. He didn't actually have flesh and blood. He was just giving the illusion. He was an emanation, they would say, and it was symbolic so that we could see what he was willing to do for us. Or the opposite. The opposite is that the man that was hanging there was an avatar of God, but he was not God. Now, look at what their thoughts and their philosophies, all because they wanted to be knowledgeable. Gnosis. This is where the word Gnostics come from. Gnosis means knowledge, it means science. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, remember that the Apostle Paul warns about the falsely called science? That word science there is the Greek word gnosis. knowledge, to know. So Gnostics were these men who had this belief that only a certain level of them were capable of reaching higher learning. That only they were certain capable men who could reach such a level of understanding and such a level of knowledge that was above the common man, that there were things too difficult for others to understand, and that therefore only they could understand. Well, that sounds like most of all false prophets and false teachers, right? Well, the reason you're not understanding is because it takes a brilliant mind to understand it. You have to exercise your mind. Your mind is too simple for you to understand these deep concepts of the Bible that I have. Well, that's interesting considering that God used the most simplest language to leave His Bible for the simplest of men to understand. He didn't give it to knowledgeable men to explain. He left it so that the common man could understand for himself. But the Gnostics had become puffed up by their knowledge. Nobody's denying they were knowledgeable. No one is denying that indeed these philosophers had some very interesting thoughts, right? The problem was is that their knowledge had puffed them up. Does anyone remember what did Paul encounter there in Athens in regards to this group of people of the Epicureans and the Stoics? What was their favorite hobby there at Athens? They had all sorts of gods, but what was their favorite hobby? Who would have thought that wisdom became entertainment? They would gather to the square because they wanted to debate. But not only to debate, they wanted to learn something new. Now here's the question that very likely would have boggled their mind. For what purpose do you want to learn something new? That's the question we have to ask ourselves every time we open the Bible, every time we come to Bible class, every time we study with someone. What purpose do I want to learn something new? There's nothing wrong with wanting to learn something new as long as that purpose is so that I can grow and make proper application in my life. I don't want to learn just for learning's sake. I want to learn because I want to become wise, and wisdom only happens through application. You see? So when we look at Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1, and how Proverbs chapter 12, verse 28 ends, what we're seeing is that Solomon is telling us that that knowledge that we acquire is either going to lead us to life or is going to lead us to death. Notice, knowledge has the power to lead us in both ways. How we use the knowledge is how we choose what path to walk on. I have to be willing to be humble. I have to first and foremost be willing to accept correction. If I'm not willing to accept that I am wrong, if I'm not willing to acknowledge that what I hold or what I teach may be wrong, then I am no longer wise. But to follow Proverbs 12:1, I'll use the old King James Version and the American Standard 1901, I am a brute. I am being brutish. Remember how I said we'd get back to that word? So go back to Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1. But he who hates correction, again, Old King James, American Standard 1901 says, is brutish. Now that Hebrew word is very interesting, right? Because in our translation, and the same is true in Legacy, and it's also true in the New American Standard. Joel, you have the New American Standard, right? Does yours say stupid as well? It does say stupid. So in those, the word has been translated stupid. And it is indeed the word stupid, but it has a deeper, exhibited example. Question, what is a brute?
I think of the character from Popeye, Brutus.
Think of the character Popeye, Brutus. Okay. Okay.
Not very smart. He was just big and strong.
Okay.
No
manners. No what?
No manners.
No manners. See, the reason he started giggling is because I thought the same word in Spanish, brother. In Spanish, the word brute, we translate it to bruto. Or for a woman, bruta. No seas bruto. Don't be dumb. Don't be stupid. For us in Spanish, it's easier to understand the word, right? But what is the actual definition of a brute? What is a brute? Not how we understand it. What is the actual definition of a brute? It's actually an animal. And go ahead. In an animalistic character, right? But specifically a specific type of animals. Animals used out on the farms. So let's go ahead and list some of these farm animals. What are some farm animals that we would use? An ox, a pig, right? But we won't use the pig because the pig actually doesn't fit in this. The
donkey.
The mule, right? So what do these animals have in common? They're strong.
A strong back and a weak mind.
A strong back and a weak mind, right? Back to Popeye, Brutus, right? But she's actually right. Why do you say that, Sister B? And welcome back, by the way. Why do you say they have a strong back and a weak mind?
Even in Spanish, they did, like, you're like, you don't comprehend.
You don't comprehend.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Burro.
Burro, right? That's a donkey. How are these animals trained? You have to beat them, right? You train them through pain, if you will. You see the idea that Solomon is using here? You wouldn't reason with an ox. You wouldn't reason with a donkey. You wouldn't reason with a mule. Would you sit there and have a conversation with the mule? Listen, look, why are you making me hit you? You know, I'm trying to show you the right way. Is that mule even going to understand? You see the comparison that Solomon is saying? Someone who hates, pay attention, someone who hates correction. It's not just someone who doesn't like it. They have a strong dislike for it. They have a strong displeasure for it. Well, someone earlier said the word stubborn. Stubborn people hate being corrected, don't they? Stubborn people, arrogant stubborn people, despise it. They hate being wrong. And because they cannot be wrong, they will argue just because they have to win the argument, even if they are wrong. Okay, what happened to Pharaoh? In the book of Exodus, what happened to Pharaoh?
Argued until he was dead.
He argued until he was dead. Moses told him, "Let my people go. Who is Jehovah God that I should heed him?" You know, in the first plague, that's God's way of saying, "Hi, I'm Jehovah. Nice to meet you."
Yeah.
You wanted to know who I am? Here's who I am. I am actually God, not like those statues that you have. And plague after plague after plague, Pharaoh is seeing the power of God. He is seeing that he himself is not a god and that he should let the Israelite people go, the Hebrew people go. But what does he do?
He hardens his heart.
Do you think that was pretty stupid, Sister Vicky? His own royal court advised him to let the people go. His own counselors told him, "Look at the ruin of Egypt. Let them go. Why do you persist in holding these people? This God of the Hebrews is going to be the end of us." And Pharaoh refused. And ultimately, not only did he kill his soldiers, not only did he die in the Red Sea himself, but he also brought his entire kingdom down with him. He was a brute, wasn't he? He was brutish. He was animalistic. He was only going off of instinct, the wrong instinct, his proud instinct, his obstinate heart. There was no reasoning with him.
Sometimes we're dumber than those animals you mentioned.
Sometimes we are dumber than these animals, right? Because I don't know if you guys remember a few years when I preached on Balaam's donkey. Donkeys are actually not dumb animals. In fact, none of these are. We think they are just because of the way that they're stubborn, but donkeys, for example, are actually very loyal. Donkeys are very loyal animals to their masters. In fact, there in the book of Numbers, we see that the instinctual character of loyalty of the donkey is seen, because where Balaam was the one hitting him, what was the donkey trying to do?
Save him.
He's trying to save him. What did the donkey see that Balaam did not?
Danger.
He was being loyal to his master. But what did Balaam do? How did Balaam treat him? He hit him. Instead of wondering, what is my animal preventing me from? He's never acted this way before. He didn't reason through, because all he could see was what? Greed. Power. Covetousness. Every one of these things that I've mentioned, many times, make us hate correction, doesn't it? Because the one wise enough to correct me in my greed, in my lust, in my covetousness, whatever I want, is getting in the way of what my heart desires. Our time is up. We've started verse 1, part of it. but we will continue this, Lord willing, next Wednesday. But your homework, brothers and sisters, go home, study chapter 12. Look at it several times. If you only read it 5 times by next Wednesday, you did not read it enough. So read it over so that we can continue studying from it. Remember, the point of the 12th chapter is to help us sharpen our discernment, to help us sharpen our judgment and choices that we make. Thank you all for your participation. Thank you all for your attention. Let's go ahead and have a quick word of prayer, and then we will be dismissed. If you will, please bow with me.